This is the Future Great City Podcast from NextSTL.com. Today, we're joined by Jeff Rainford, former chief of staff to City of St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay. Described by friends and foes alike as fierce and effective, Rainford was instrumental in returning local control of the city's police department to the city for the first time since the Civil War. He was also the city's point person on the unsuccessful effort to keep the Rams in St. Louis and worked hard on keeping the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency in the city. The city should learn next month if that effort proves successful. Jeff is now an independent public policy consultant.
So joining us today is Jeff Rainford. I'll always call him probably the former chief of staff to Mayor Francis Slay, but that's not a current title. So if you want to start out by telling us what you're doing now, maybe that's a great place to start.
Well, I worked for Mayor Slay for 14 years, so it is a big part of my identity that I was his chief of staff, and I think it'll be in my obit. So that's fair on your part. You know, I'm a consultant now in public policy, and pretty much all aspects of public policy other than lobbying. I don't do lobbying work, but I am still heavily involved both civically and professionally in, how we govern ourselves, how we govern ourselves as a city and as a region, how we move ourselves forward, how we take advantage of the strengths that St. Louis has and how we deal with the weaknesses that it has. But I'm doing it, instead of doing it in the mayor's office, I'm doing it out on my own now.
Right. So we have about 30 minutes of your time. We try to keep the podcast to that time, so it's fun to listen to. So we're going to run through a lot of things probably pretty quick, and I know a lot of people will be interested to hear from you. So backing up just a little bit, and I guess this is still current, is talking about the NFL and what happened through that process. And obviously, I don't know if it's obvious, but you were heavily involved, right?
Can
you explain your involvement? I know at some point you were a consultant, but it was a pro bono work, or it was just how were you involved? What was your role in that process?
Well, when I was in the mayor's office, I was the mayor's point person on the NFL. So I felt like when I came out of the mayor's office, it would not be the right thing ethically for me to get paid to work on the stadium. So I did not get paid, but I did continue to work on it very heavily, really with the city's point of view in mind. And the mayor, the mayor and my successor, Mary Ellen Ponder, were both fine with that, but I didn't get paid for it again because I didn't think that was the right thing. But I spent a lot of time on it. I believed in the project, and it didn't work out.
So this is one of the critiques after the fact has been, maybe from Kroenke's side, is that this is a long process. A little bit of like, the city's known, or the CVC has been in breach of this contract for years and years and years, and we kind of said, okay, it doesn't have to be top tier now, and then we waited a couple years and we said, okay, it doesn't have to be top tier still. But part of their argument was that this wasn't a surprise, right? In a sense that maybe the city and the state and other people should have started this process and addressed the known lease issues years and years ago. What do you think of that?
Well, that was one of the many, and I hate to use such a strong word, and I rarely do, but that was one of the many lies perpetuated by Kroenke and the Kroenke people. For a very long time, it takes two to tango. So, well before Dave Peacock left AB, Anheuser-Busch, and started to become the point person on the stadium, both the city, the county, the CVC, and others tried, the governor too, tried to engage the Rams and said, hey, let's figure out how to meet your long-term needs here. Because remember what was being proposed and what the arbitration was about a 10-year process. So the idea that the Kroenke people had...
So the $700 million only guaranteed they would have been here 10 years.
$700 million, 100% public money, $700 million, probably the dome would have been useless 2 or 3 years. Yeah. And for that, you get 10 years. There was nobody in their right mind who would think that. It was very clear to all of us that what Kroenke really wanted was to go year to year, either so at the time he would have options to move or because he had already decided he wanted to move because it worked better for his economics. But when people say, well, why didn't you start sooner, especially when it's Kroenke, of all people, saying it, that was a lie. I mean, the governor tried to engage Stan Kroenke. Bob O'Loughlin, who at the time was the head of the CVC, tried. The mayor tried. The CVC itself tried. And it was very, and what they said is, we're not interested. We're going to go through the arbitration process because we want to go year to year.
So in retrospect, it seems, as a lot of things do, seems kind of like obvious or something. It's kind of like, well, and you have people out there, of course, saying like, I told you they were leaving, right? But in the process, I feel like it was a real roller coaster. Like you literally felt at some point like, wow, St. Louis really has put together an effort and there's just no way the NFL can say no to $400 million in public money. How was it on your side of things?
So it was a mixed bag. So clearly Kroenke wanted to move to Los Angeles. Clearly Eric Grubman, the number two in the NFL, and Roger Goodell, the head of the NFL, the commissioner of the NFL, wanted to move. But what we were told is work with, they formed a six owners on a relocation committee. Mm-hmm. And the stadium task force in St. Louis worked with that relocation committee, did everything it said. It was that relocation committee that said, put an extra $100 million in from the NFL.
And that was the committee that didn't make that up. That's the committee that voted 5-1.
It voted 5-1 for the Carson project to keep the Rams in St. Louis. Basically. And like 15 minutes later, it's like it never happened.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, there's been a lot of interesting things written afterwards about how basically the big money, and we're talking big, big money, NFL is ruling the league now, where it used to be, you know, the owners worth $400 million no longer run the show like they used to, and the families who've long owned teams no longer run the show, and it's all about Jerry Jones and Kroenke.
Well, I also think it's new ownership and old ownership. You have old ownership whose basis basically now is zero. I mean, because the team was handed down by their families or whatever, and they have no money in it. Then you have new owners.
They only have money if they sell.
So. Correct. And you have new owners who actually bought their teams, leveraged it, and so they want to get every dime out of it. I think what's going on in the NFL now, though, is, and this is, listen, I've no skin off my chin anymore. I'm a big boy, but I think people need to understand that now it's all about the money. They do not care about the players. They do not care about the fans. Mm-hmm. We're all commodities, fans, players, sponsors. It's all how do they maximize the revenue. I mean, this is the Goldman Sachs.
So this is what's funny, and it's not completely in retrospect or revisionist, but you and other people work really, really hard to keep the NFL in town. And so obviously there's some value proposition that even with the cost that some people bristled against, and I had a number, maybe it was $100 million, $200 million that I would have been happy to support. I think $400 was a lot. But we still wanted the team here. Why is that?
Whether we like it or not, here's what I tell people. It is the most popular, best sport on television in America run by greedy people.
People love the NFL.
It's like some people like going to the art museum. Lots and lots and lots of people like, including, by the way, people who don't even go to the games. What we found in our polling and in our discussion with the people of St. Louis is that, for instance, a lot of African-Americans love the NFL and they don't go to the games, but they love having a team. They love watching it on television. It is, with the exception of the issue of concussions, they like having their own team. That's up to people. They'll figure out what to do. Sure. You know, whether they follow another team or whatever they do, they'll figure that out. But whether we like it or not, I mean, I'm a baseball guy. I love the Cardinals. But the fact of the matter is that when the Cardinals are in the World Series, the ratings for that in St. Louis are not as good as when two teams that are not from St. Louis are in the Super Bowl. Yeah. Okay, whether we like it or not, it is a great amenity for a city, and people like it. Now, there are people who don't go to the games or don't like the brutality or whatever who don't like it. But the fact of the matter is people like watching football on television. The problem is that the NFL owners and Grubman and Goodell know that, and now they know they've got the goose that laid the golden egg, and they're trying to maximize it. And I think there needs to be some kind of balance between them making a lot of money and being fair to players and loyal to fans.
So let's do this. This may be, hopefully, the last question on the NFL. I've already spent probably more time than I'd hoped to on this. 20 years from now, is there an NFL team in St. Louis?
If it were up to me, the answer is no, because I'm now so angry about it.
At no cost. Somebody comes in and says, I'm building my own stadium.
Well, no, I don't think so, but I don't know what the future of the NFL is. Yeah. I think the game will grow in popularity, but I think this concussion issue is a big deal.
Well, there's nothing certain. If you look back in the NBA, the NFL, all these leagues have gone up and down over time, so there's no guarantee, no matter what stockpile of money they
have. So if I were to bet, I would bet no, but I mean, part of what you do and part of the value you bring both as a civic person and a professional person is the world is changing very, very quickly, and it's very unpredictable what all those changes are going to mean. And I don't know whether, with this concussion thing, that a lot of parents of today's little kids are going to say, I'm not letting you play football, go play lacrosse or play something else.
So there are fewer concussions in soccer. Is soccer a better fit for St. Louis, thinking about the MLS and is it a better fit? And if so, I believe it is. It's because the scale is different. It just feels... To me, I'm a bigger football fan. I watch a lot more football on TV than I do soccer. And yet somehow a professional soccer team is something I would gravitate towards in St. Louis.
Correct.
It just seems to be, I don't know whether it's the startup league, it's the maybe a slightly different atmosphere at the game. It's something that just feels like a better fit to St. Louis.
Well, I don't know about that. I think we're the number one, number 20 market in America, and there's 32 football teams. So we clearly, that stuff
that's Kroenke, like a media market and income.
Correct, and right, things, exactly. So. And Fortune 500 companies and all that, and jobs and everything. And so that stuff, that Kroenke stuff, that St. Louis couldn't support a football team is malarkey. I mean, he's going to, you know, hockey's going to drive football out of St. Louis. I mean, that's
quite a compliment to hockey, I guess.
Well, I guess it is. Well, and we got a great local ownership in hockey. But having said that, football today is more popular, but I don't know what the future is going to hold. When MLS, the Major League Soccer League, is thinking, and what everything that they know says that younger people are gravitating towards soccer. And so, for instance, MLS wants to be, they want their new stadiums to be in central cities. They don't want it to be out in the suburbs. They don't see it as a older suburban audience. It's younger, more urban, more hip, more whatever, you know, with bars and restaurants nearby and that sort of thing. So clearly, we that will be a good fit for St. Louis. Whether or not it is a better fit than football, I don't know what the future of sports is going to look like, other than MLS can be successful, as you said, without the dollars being as big as
the
NFL.
Viewership. I mean, if you start,
and they're not going to, by the way, be as greedy as these NFL guys who are basically. Well, no, they're going to have to get to be a lot bigger before they get that. I think, you know, to me, the NFL has almost become too big to fail. It is so popular that they think they can get away with anything. And by the way, this thing with Kroenke shows they can get away with anything. Yeah. Soccer's not there yet. There's more humility to it. The numbers are smaller. But the good news for St. Louis is that it's it seemingly is an urban sport. They want, you know, younger and more urban and more hip, and I think that will fit in.
Well, when you start looking at TV ratings, and not yet in the United States, but you talk about the Super Bowl, there are more people, a lot more people by magnitudes around the world that watch the World Cup, that watch European Championship games. I mean, it's a bigger draw globally already by far, which I think a lot of people.
And St. Louis is a big. Amateur soccer place, and so I think
in the friendly matches here, we've sold out, you know, 50,000 seats in a day. I mean, it's a big.
I don't think think that, you know, comparing it to the National Football League is apples and oranges, but I think without the NFL here, Major League Soccer will thrive in St. Louis. I will predict.
Well, it's one of those things too, where you can imagine that soccer players themselves just aren't as big as stars, right? So you can imagine seeing a soccer player out in St. Louis, a pro from a St. Louis team, and saying hi to them, and not them being surrounded by an entourage. Or living an hour away and being escorted to the stadium.
I think what
like
they would.
More.
I think what they'd like to do is build up some rivalries with Chicago and Kansas City. And I'm not a soccer guy. I'm more an NFL guy, or at least I was. And I'm told that the Portland and Seattle franchises, like, it's crazy the rivalry there.
That's great. So we have one more big project to talk about in St. Louis. And what I really do want to get into, though, and see how much time we can take on it, is just the system of our governance in St. Louis City. And you spend a lot of your time thinking about this. And also get to accomplishments that the mayor and you know yourself in a lot of ways had at the state house level, and then think about, you know, kind of what didn't happen that you wanted to see happen, and kind of what you think is coming next. But we do have to hit on, well, first of all, are you involved in the MLS project at all?
Like, not yet, but I hope to be. But it's really it's really only 6 weeks old.
There's a group together that's 8 people.
I am not on the task force that is studying the thing. I hope to be helpful in that, but I'm not yet. But again, it's all brand new.
So the other big decision coming is the NGA, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. And I follow most of this stuff via social media, and I don't know, you do as well, I imagine. And so it's been kind of fun but annoying to watch, like, the St. Clair County Development Agency, Corporation, whoever they are, kind of dump on St. Louis. So it's getting, which I think is hilarious, because it's as if the NGA is, like, following Twitter and being like, oh my gosh, they're right. Like, maybe, you know, like, no part of this decision is based on this, like, Twitter spat that St. Clair County is throwing at St. Louis, right? And what I've seen, at least from my view, is that the St. Louis argument has been much more positive. You know, I mean, I've kind of, you know.
Yeah, I've been the only one who's been very negative, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, they're negative to the St. Clair County, but they're, like, factual.
I mean, I've said, hey, well, you know, this is a technology company, okay? Yeah. And their workforce of the future are going to be young people who are technology savvy, who are technology sophisticated, and they're not going to want to work in a farm field in Illinois.
Funny thing
that's kind of been my point.
St. Clair County has actually responded to that very point, saying that there are more, like, how many millennials are stationed at Scott Air Force Base? And I'm thinking, like, what that, like, of course, a lot of the people at Skyward Force Base.
Yeah, people in the military are young.
It's like, it just kind of blows my. Anyway, so where are we with that? What kind of update can you provide? And
well, the decision.
And are you optimistic? And what happens if we don't get it? What happens if we do? It? And this is retaining about 3,000 jobs, moving from Soulard basically to North St. Louis to a largely vacant area.
So NGA, National Geospatial. Is a federal agency mostly made up of civilians who use, and I can't even explain it. I've been on two tours of the thing. Right now it's down in Soulard, and I've been two tours of it, and I can't really, because I'm not very technology savvy, I can't really explain it. But in essence, they provide data information, and they do data mining, data management for the military intelligence agencies of the federal government.
And they literally map the world.
They do more than that now, but yes.
Drones and things like this using maps that they do. And they famously, they've kind of opened up their doors a little bit, and you've been on a couple tours, and other media have. And they build a model of bin Laden's compound in Pakistan. And they've done, I mean, they've involved at the absolute highest levels of intelligence gathering and mapping.
And especially, I mean, in essence, they're a technology agency. And again, I can't even explain the level of sophistication. It's through the roof. But like, you know, Robert Cordillo, who's the head of the thing, went to the electronics convention in Las Vegas and made a speech because he's trying to open up and say, hey, here's who I am. Because he knows, A, that, you know, he wants people to understand what NGA does nationally, not just in St. Louis, what they do. But more importantly, he has to compete with other technology companies to get a very good workforce.
College graduates, you know, go look at Facebook, look at other things, but look at us as well. Right?
Absolutely. I mean,
that's the kind of talent they want.
That's the kind of talent they want. And so a big part of what St. Louis has done as it has chased NGA over the last 3 years is to really try to help him, well, actually the Army Corps and lower level people at NGA have been going through this to help them think about how do you create not the NGA from the 1960s and 1970s, which is seemingly what Illinois is proposing, but the NGA of the future with your future workforce. So obviously the kind of a place that's near the places where young people want to live, near the universities, because he's talking about doing deals and doing partnerships with universities and that sort of thing. The other part of this is the city has spent a great deal of money and a lot of effort. You know, people have said, well, the city's making the case for why NGA is good for the city, but how about the city good for NGA? When I was in the mayor's office, the mayor, the development agencies, everybody involved with this, that's what we spent the last 3 years doing, is to show NGA and to understand their needs and the Army Corps, which I guess is going to build it, to understand their needs. And in fact, at one point, the footprint included, and it was a little controversial, included Pruitt-Igoe, and the NGA said that won't work, so they moved the footprint.
Why wouldn't that work?
I don't remember the
environmental issues.
No, because we actually had lined up the EPA to clean up Pruitt-Igoe. It had to do with the security and the the way they build it and the way that it worked for.
So it's a highly
but it was NGA's It was NGA's decision, not the city. So the city has spent 3 years, both as far as the facility itself goes, but also how you build this into the fabric of the city and the fabric of the region. So the city has figured out a plan that will be good for NGA as far as, you know, building a secure facility that they want. There's a lot of discussion about, you know, how employees will get to and from NGA so that they feel comfortable with it. And as well, you know, that it's going to be near places where the workforce of the future is going to want to live, the amenities that they want, and near the universities and that sort of thing. So the idea that this is a 1960s spy agency that has to be in the middle of nowhere, Utah, so that everybody leaves them alone, that is not NGA.
So what's amazing, too, is if people aren't, I think people, it's been in the news a lot, so people are more or less familiar with the site, but I'm always shocked at how close to downtown it is and how close to the Central Corridor. And when people talk about...
it's only a few miles from Cortex.
Yeah, and for whatever validity there is for people to say, well, there's a lot of crime in North St. Louis, not in this part of North St. Louis. There's not a lot there. In a way, it's like, it's empty. And so, you know, we're recording this in the Grove in Forest Park Southeast at Space Architects. And when this company moved here in 2009, there were employees who thought, man, I don't want to drive down there. We used to be in Maplewood. I felt great there. And they're not that different. And this neighborhood is... changed vastly since then, but even back then, it wasn't a place that you had to be fearful of driving to your job at 9 a.m.
That is not the
North St. Louis site is the same. There's just not...
That's not going to be an issue for there. But I will say this, as part of the city, the issue has been raised by NGA and the Army Corps, and the city's addressing it, and the boulevards there, people are going to have to feel safe driving in, driving out. Sure. That's not going to be an expensive thing. They don't have to, they don't have to bring in the Air National or Army National Guard, because as you point out, the issues there are more perception than anything, and it seems to be, by the way, from what I can tell, Illinois' number one argument for why Illinois is better for NGA is that the city's a scary place.
Right.
I think there's a racial component to that. I hope that, given the fact that the president is African American, that it has no impact or even backfires on them. You asked me what I think. I think that if Robert Cordillo is allowed to make the decision solely for what's good for national security and NGA, it'll be a no-brainer and he'll pick North St. Louis. If Illinois plays the old inside baseball national political game better, and they're very, very good at it, and they've got some very powerful people, and the president is from Illinois, then, all bets are off. But I think if this is purely on the merits, it won't even be a close call.
So that sounds like a toss-up.
That's what I tell people. I think it's 50-50.
It really is, yeah.
If it was just on the merits, it's 90-10. If you throw in politics, see, I would have told you with the NFL, if where the Rams ended up was purely on the merits, we'd win. But if it was internal NFL politics, we're going to lose.
All the way
from
the beginning was kind of like the people who thought the Rams could stay believed that the NFL would enforce their own rules.
Right.
And then the other side was kind of like,
correct.
Yeah, right.
They're
going to
do whatever makes the most money.
The NGA process is probably less transparent in a way because people don't understand it and people aren't allowed in on that process. So very quickly, like one thing I like to emphasize or highlight about the NGA is it's not relocating a corporate headquarters. This is a 100-year investment, probably.
Correct.
Right? And so when they choose a new location, they're going to be there for a very long time. So what does that mean to the city? And I guess that's why you put
so
much
I think
time
that,
and money into it.
Correct. Right? I think that there's several aspects of it. One is the psychological aspect. I mean, this is now high risk, high reward, and everybody's looking at it. And I think there are people who are looking at this as, there are a lot of people, at least in the business community, maybe ordinary citizens, who are looking at this as the NFL thing. And the NFL thing was, although it did spawn some really good feelings about St. Louis because of the way it happened, it was still a loss to St. Louis. And I think that there are people who will view this as not only a loss to the city of St. Louis, but a loss to the metropolitan area. It's almost like, and maybe it shouldn't be this way, but it's almost like it going over to Illinois, it might as well go to, Milwaukee, Wisconsin or something.
Right.
So I think the psychological part, if this goes badly for the city, will be damaging. The impact on the city budget, $3 or $4 million a year, probably not all that awful, especially because a lot of that $3 or $4 million will be plowed back into the project. I think that there will be a really lost opportunity because even today, we can all argue about Northside redevelopment and Paul McKee and whether it's all been done tactically the right way or the wrong way. The fact of the matter is there has not been large-scale investment in North St. Louis in a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And while, people can say, well, Paul's made this mistake or that mistake, at the end of the day, what I think has gone wrong there is people still, both locally, regionally, and nationally, still view North St. Louis as dangerous North St. Louis where, you stay away from. And to have this level, more than $1 billion project going to North St. Louis, I think even though it's a very secure place, I get that. It's not like you're, building a $1 billion residential commercial development. It really does change the narrative, and maybe not in the first year or two, but I think it changes the direction dramatically, and I think very much for the positive. I read the census numbers, not only the every 10-year census numbers, but the every one-year census estimates, and the city of St. Louis is still losing African-American people, are still moving out to, and it's mostly from North City out to North County. North St. Louis is still losing population, still seeing property values go down, and we need to flip the trajectory there. That is huge part of our city, a huge part of our region. So I think that both psychologically and practically, it is a very big deal for the city.
Well, and as you say, I think as you talk about these big projects, and sometimes the bigger they are, the easier it is to poke holes in it and say, well, this isn't urban, or this isn't that, or this, someone's going to be harmed by this, or someone has to move their house. But one of the messages we keep putting out there is that it should be so obvious to us that St. Louis primarily suffers from a lack of investment. So I hope we have the day where we have so much investment we can fight about real gentrification issues.
But it's uneven. I mean, we do have investment in the city and in some parts of the inner suburbs, and we have unfortunately a ton of investment in the exurbs. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, in the city, it's uneven. I mean, I think with Cortex, you're seeing and gonna see the central west end, and then it will gravitate eastward, is gonna boom. But you go into North St. Louis, and I'm telling you, North St. Louis is still today. You know, we could all say, well, let's wait 50 years. Well, you know, maybe we could wait. If we wait 50 years, something, you know, good will happen and it will finally hit rock bottom. But what we don't want to see is, okay, we have to wait, or we, you know, to me it would be racist to think, let's wait till all the black people move out and then let's do something with North St. Louis. Let's do it today. And I get
that
you would not, like, if this thing was going to go in Benton Park or this thing was going to go, you know, wherever else, it'd be a bad idea. But we're talking about an area that since World War II, unending, uninterrupted, has seen a loss of population and a loss of investment. And is it a perfect project for an urban setting? It is not. I mean, it'll be heavily secured and that sort of thing. But right now, what's the alternative?
Right. And that's where this conversation is, I think, emerging about understanding the pervasiveness of poverty. And that is the real threat. And while gentrification or development or moving people a couple blocks or buying out a house and having them have to find a new place is not
ideal.
Your number one priority, right? That's not what you're trying to accomplish. But the opposite is a continuing, you know, 65 years of lack of investment.
And you should have Mary Ellen Ponder and some of the mayor's people on, because I'm not an expert on it, but they've got a planning grant. And they're trying to get a $100 million federal, it requires a huge match, but $100 million in federal money to take what would have been, if their first idea was to take the stadium, which was on the North Riverfront, and NGA, and redevelop the area for African-American people, not for gentrification, not to drive them out and bring in white people. Right. So part of it is not just building NGA or not building building a soccer stadium, if that's what it is on the North Riverfront, but at least on that swath of ground on the near north side, figure out how for African-American people you can make that, you know, less crime, more jobs, more opportunities, more retail experiences, more healthcare, whatever it is. But to actually, it's not just a one-off, you build the thing and go back to sleep, but how do you build off of these big projects in North St. Louis?
On that note, and I don't mean to zero in on the mayor himself, because I don't think it's about the individual, but I want to talk to you about the system and why try to find the right way to ask this, but why hasn't the mayor been more successful at redeveloping the north side? I mean, what's the limit of a mayor's power to actually change a city? And I think that, and this gets to the bigger question in my mind of saying that the mayor represents 11% of our metro region, the city of St. Louis, and that's it. But he's by far the most recognizable,
and
by far
the most popular,
quoted, the most cited.
The most popular. I saw data on it. Most popular.
The others I can think of aren't particularly popular. So maybe he's battling against some people who are down on their luck. But he represents the region, but he only controls a very small part. And within the city itself, in the system, with the Board of Aldermen and the other citywide offices and things, he's pretty limited in his power. And I think that sometimes that can feel like an excuse. So people expect a lot of him. And a lot of times, whether I hear it, you know, publicly or privately, is kind of like, well, the mayor can't just go do that. The mayor can't just go do that.
And people understand that. I mean, I will have to tell you, I mean, there are a lot of people who view the mayor more positively than they view the city positively. I think people understand. I believe that there's a number of issues facing both the city and the region that are very, very difficult, and that people of your age and younger are going to be the ones who are going to get it right. Number one is, obviously, and you're kind of getting at this, way too many lines, way too many people in charge, way too many fiefdoms, whether it's within city government, which I think we've got, whatever it is, 13 citywide elected officials, or within St. Louis County where you have 94 municipalities.
And this is kind of basic civics, but we don't understand this well in St. Louis. The mayor does not have any... don't report to the mayor.
The budget director does not work for the mayor. Right. The chief financial officer does not work for the mayor. The person who keeps the money doesn't work for the mayor. It used to be that the police chief didn't work for the mayor. Uh-huh. I mean, we can go down the line. We have what I call a weak, strong mayor system, in the sense that Mayor Slay is a full-time person. But, you know, he cannot spend or make decisions on spending more than $5,000 without getting at least one other person at the Board of ENA to prove it. But by the way, the government structure is only part of it. The other part that is really a big deal for our region and for our city is segregation. Okay, segregation where people live. And this, while the city of St. Louis is the least segregated part of the region, and actually in some manner, not maybe block by block, but in some manner, you know, you go to Chicago and people on who live up by Wrigley Field, whatever happens down in Hyde Park, it might as well be in another state or another country. We don't have that in the city of St. Louis. But within the region, we are one of the most racially segregated regions in America. And what ends up happening with that is when you concentrate low-income African-Americans all in one place, I mean, it creates issues, and that's what you have in North City. And now that slowly we're watching the same thing happen in North County, and it's a really big deal. And the people who have moved out to the exurbs, whether it's St. Charles, Franklin, or Jefferson County, they like the quality of life out there, but we are a very, very, by landmass, a large metropolitan area. We're very, very spread out. We, you know, and then you have smaller issues like in other places, the city of Clayton would actually be part of the city of St. Sure. Louis, and that tax base would be part of, and would be shared. So, I mean, the issues that we, and then, of course, we're post-industrial. We used to make things. That's what St. Louis did. And, of course, like everywhere else in America, those, you know, we have the global forces that we don't make things like we used to. So while our issues are not as acute as in Detroit, Cleveland, and other places, we've got kind of the same dynamics. And one person, you know, when you take into account the racial dynamics we have, the post-industrial issues we have, and you add to the fact that we're spread out and have, you know, right. all these lines, one person can't fix all of that. So and that's why I always tell people.
And one person who represents a small
group. Or even, by the way, one generation. I mean, my generation has still got issues, you know, or still have racial hangups. Yeah. I know it.
You're still messing things up.
We're certainly not making them better. But what I tell people my age who do understand these issues is that we got to at least make incremental movement until people your age and younger are like, this younger is a mostly. Bunch of nonsense, okay?
So, and I want to touch on a couple things you said, because this is something, again, I think people don't have clear a lot of time. So in the last mayoral race, the mayor got criticized pretty heavily for saying we live in an integrated city. And I think that the people's perception is you look at these dot maps and these things now, and it's like, oh, you know, the red dots are over here and the blue dots are over here. We don't live together. And the mayor's point, and I think what you get to, is that in St. Louis, there's another way to look at integration. And what the study showed that in St. Louis, you're more likely to work with, interact with, have a conversation with someone of a different skin color than yourself than you are in almost any other city. So you can talk about Portland or Seattle being integrated, but it's homogenous. And so the small minority population is kind of dispersed. And here, our minority populations are bunched together in a lot of ways, but we're still a city where you're going to interact with people of different backgrounds and different colors and different...
Unless you move, you know, really, really far away.
Right.
And I mean, I a friend of mine I was just with from Chicago, and he said it himself. They live up, you know, somewhere around Wrigleyville up in Chicago. And, you know, and I'm like, well, what do you all think about, you know, everything that's going on with Rahm and the police shootings and all of this stuff? And it's like, it might as well be in another world.
Well, and this is the other... You know,
it's not another world here. I mean, you go to our best neighborhood by... I saw something in the paper the other day that the apartment rents in the Central West End are the highest in the region. Mm-hmm. You go three blocks north of the Central West End, and it's now. Is it perfect? No, but there are some human nature issues. I mean, people like to say St. Louis this, St. Louis that. But if you ask, you know, if people who follow demographics, you know, white people everywhere, okay, will, you know, mostly be comfortable with up to 30% minority. It gets above
30%. They consider that integrated.
They consider it integrated enough that they're comfortable with it. Because if you're a white person and you're 30% and the minority is 70%, that's integrated too. But they start, you know, people like to live near people who are like them. It's human nature. Now, I think if the real key to this is the more we understand our nature, the more we can be aware of why we're making bad decisions. And so white flight doesn't have to happen. And I think hopefully with data and other things, young people your age and younger will be more aware of their own inclinations and how their own inclinations can actually do harm to them, do harm to their cities and communities, and actually work against it. You know, the people, my parents and grandparents, you know, they would have told you, well, 30% is kind of the tipping point. They'd look at you like, you know, you're insane.
Yeah, 1% okay, is a tipping point.
Right, yeah. but people, I think, are growing, especially younger people, more and more aware of the difference between their emotional reaction to things and what's in their own best interest. We didn't used to have that. Well, black person moved in, you moved out. I mean, that's the way it worked in St. Louis and other places.
My hope of that kind of change is a little bit limited, because I think human nature is human nature, and expecting people to have a more worldly view or accepting view is that is changing generationally, but
well, the other thing is they don't. But they don't have. It's funny because somebody a little younger than you went to the Carole King show, and when I was a kid, Carole King was the biggest. She was huge in the 70s, and this young lady was like had to Google Carole King to know who she is.
Sure.
You don't, I mean, what I'm getting at is that people your age and younger don't have the didn't go through the history of the racial issues that really hit this country.
Right.
Both positively and negatively after World War II until recently. You don't know about white flight and, you know...
Black flight, it's economic flight. One's staying.
Well, no, that is going to be difficult. Even young people are not, you know... we'll have to see whether young people in large enough numbers will end up, being willing to live with people who are economically diverse. But, I mean, the world is changing so fast. I mean, we're going to have these automated cars in a few years, and we have no idea how all this is going to play out.
One of the other challenges in St. Louis, I think, and it's the best part and the worst part in a way, is the lack of people who are from far away. So, you know, because what you hit on is that if I'm, 40 years old, then I would have grown up with, my grandmother and, talking about how great North St. Louis was, but don't go east of Skinker, don't go down here. And you can't, it's hard to get past that. If you're told that from the age of 5 to 25, it's really hard to overcome that, no matter what your personal experiences are. And so, but I moved here 12 years ago. I don't know about any of that stuff. I mean, you can figure that out. There's some things that are apparent, and people do tell you. But I didn't grow up being told afraid, right?
Right,
so I think more people from outside the region and more young people moving in from cities. I mean, the response I get a lot of times is people move in and they're like, oh, I'm looking at an apartment in the Grove, and you kind of apologetically like, well, there are car break-ins over there. And they're like, how are you talking about? Like, I grew up in New York. Like, leave me alone.
So you'll have to answer this question. So as I was trying to think about the cities even today and even tomorrow are not going to be the places for everybody, because there are people who are driven by the need to have a variety of experiences, and that's me. I get bored really easily. I could not live out in the exurbs. I would be so bored, I would turn to drinking. Literally, I'm not kidding about that. I'd be depressed. And so I'm willing to put up with some stuff because I want a variety of, I don't want just all white 57-year-old men hanging around me, okay? I want a variety of experiences. But there are other people who really are driven by security, and they're afraid of a variety. They're afraid of diversity, and they're afraid of crime and other things. And so the real question is going to be going forward, how does that break down? Because cities are going to be populated by people who want a variety of experiences and can live in diverse circumstances, both by race and other ways. And the question is going forward, you're not going to have, even with young people, you're not going to get to a point where 50% of young people want to live in the central city and 50% are going to live in the suburbs. It's still going to be a majority of people are going to live in the suburbs. The question is, right now it's probably 10 to 15% who want to live in central cities. Is that going to grow to 20 to 25%? If it does, the future of the city of St. Louis is going to be extraordinarily bright. You will see growth. You will see investment. You'll see all kinds of good things happening.
It is a small change to do that. And when you look at cities like that,
you go from 15 to 20%. That's big.
That's the difference between St. Louis and San Francisco and Boston is the number of young professionals who live here, and they leave those cities just as fast as they leave St. Louis, but they don't come here first. So.
And then the other issue is, what are we going to do? We cannot have, it is not good for anybody, but especially for poor people. We can't have all the poor people be in one place and all the middle class people in another place and all the wealthy people, whatever their race, in another place. It's not going to work for anybody, especially, by the way, for poor people. And so how do you get, it's one thing to say, well, we're going to make the people of St. Charles take Section 8. Well, first of all, good luck with that.
Right.
But, I mean, how are we going to deal with these issues?
Well,
and I'm hopeful.
When the outlet mall fails, you can just move people in there, right? Yeah. Like, that's
well,
again,
but if it's, even if it's a pocket, I mean, we need to live together,
And we haven't even touched on homelessness, which the city...
Bears the brunt of the responsibility for.
And there's a whole bunch of other stuff we haven't talked to. Let's do... very quick points, and we'll wrap up because we're already running late. True or false, the local control of the police is probably the best, the greatest accomplishment at the state house level for the city in the last...
Since the Civil War, but recently. Right. I think it was the most difficult. You know, 8 years before it happened, I remember standing outside next to the Grant statue at City Hall, and it popped into my head, and I called the guy at Civic Progress and says, you know what, we can't do this anymore. We got to change it. And the first reaction was, well, that's too hard.
Right.
So it was the one of the more, that and reforming the firefighters' pension were the two hardest things that we ever did. I actually think some of the things that we did that I'm the proudest of are the things that affect ordinary citizens. And I know the standard has changed, but before the standard changed, we made a dramatic reduction in the number of children who were poisoned by lead.
Yeah.
The mayor started, I think it's pushing 20 charter schools now, and I know that's controversial, but he didn't do it because he was against something. He was for every kid having an opportunity to go to a good school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was things like that, and there are a lot
of things. Those are big issues. I hope people read more about those and look into them, because I think every big challenge in St. Louis has been met with a real effort to change it, and there's been a lot of success, and we have a lot of work to do, but those are big deals. I mean, those are changing.
And they are. And I get that. I understand, because I used to be in the news business, why a new football stadium for the Rams was bigger news than what's going on with charter schools or lead poisoning, or what's happening as far as improving recreational opportunities. The city created two new recreational centers. I get that those don't make news and football does, but just because football's in the news 100 times more than those other things, A, doesn't mean it's 100 times more important, or more importantly, B, that elected officials are spending 100 times more time on it.
So what didn't happen? What's the one thing you would have liked to accomplish that you were not able to?
This is a metric, and I'm a metric
guy. And
there's
only guy. One.
Only one. I know. This is a metric, and I'm a metric guy, but I still remember the time in 2010, or actually it would have been 2011, when I got the call that our census numbers for 2000 went down, and it's still the most disappointing day of my time in the mayor's office. And I get that it's a metric, and it's probably pride and vanity and ego, but it's only a number. But the fact that the city's population has not been growing to me is a personal disappointment.
Right, that's a hard goal, because there's no... The action points to that goal are like 100 different things.
Well, and we did 100 different things.
No,
that's
absolutely.
That's why, like, I hope
but
that there would have been...
But if you set that out as, like, let's grow the population,
right.
It's like there's no obvious answer to that at all.
No.
And the city had challenged those numbers, right? And this was about the time I arrived, and, you know...
Well, we decided not to, because at the end
of the... But through the 2000s, like, the estimate was up to, like, 350,000, and the idea was the city had grown by 1% or something. And then it was kind of a shock to people.
It was. Well, it was a shock to me.
Anticipation was that we had grown or we had stabilized.
Right. It was a shock to me. Now, when you looked at the numbers, it wasn't surprising. All of the numbers can be explained by a loss of population among school-age African-Americans. And when you take their parents into account, had lost over that decade school-aged African-Americans and school families with school-aged children who were African-American and gained in other areas. And you can understand that because North St. Louis is not especially if you had the ability to move to some of the suburbs of North County, you're going for a better school, you're going for a safer neighborhood. I mean, it's understandable, except that now what's unfortunately in slow motion and maybe even in faster motion, what happened in North St. Louis is starting to happen and is happening in North County.
Right.
And so it's something both as a city and as a region that we have to address. And I hope, you know, listen, it was, let me just say again, to conclude on the question, I mean, that was a big disappointment to me. And I wouldn't say I viewed it as an overall failure, but it was certainly a data point that indicated that there's a heck of a lot more work to be done.
Yeah, and the interesting part is that percentage-wise, you lost a lot more residents north of Del Mar and North City, but I think there are almost equal numbers lost north and south. And so south is much more dense, but there were 17,000 lost north of Del Mar, 17,000 south, and then we gained some in the central quarter.
Yeah, and again, from a racial standpoint, the failure would have been with crime that African-American families have to face and with bad schools that African-American families have to face. And we just have to do better. And it's a reason, not the only reason, why I am so bullish on NGA. Do I think it'll solve everything? No. Do I think it's a huge step forward? Yes.
All right, truly the last thing, and I know you got to run. We always ask people, what does it take for St. Louis to be a future great city? So it used to be population. It used to be if your city's population is growing, you must be doing something right. And I think that narrative's changing. You know, Atlanta is having problems. You know, a booming Phoenix doesn't mean it's a great city. So what does it mean in your mind for St. Louis to become a future great city? What's our best self, to, so to speak, in the next
that we are that that both as a city and as individuals, we are one of the smartest cities in America. In other words, we are attracting smart people who want to live here, and smart people are running the place. I mean, if I had to pick one metric, it would be, you know, are we becoming, we don't have to become bigger. I agree with you. I kind of had to learn to get over that after the census number that we just talked about. But are we getting to be smarter? And I mean at all levels, you know, not just are we getting more PhDs.
Dealing with homelessness.
Yeah,
everything.
Well, it's both, is our population becoming smarter, mm-hmm. and are we getting smarter people involved in government? I was bemoaning the fact the other day that it seems like really smart people want to go to Wall Street or go somewhere else. Can we get smart? There's a really young, really bright WashU graduate in the mayor's office, and can we get smart people involved in government? Can we get smart people involved in civic affairs? Can we get smart people involved in architecture? You know, yeah, I don't want all the smart people can't go to Wall Street or go into technology, and so. I think that the future of cities are going to be, you know, whichever cities are the smartest in every way imaginable, those are the cities that are going to thrive. So if you say, how can we judge whether St. Louis is a great city or becoming a great city or one of the great cities, it's are we one of the smartest cities in all of the permutations and all of the ways
that
is.
That sounds great. Jeff, thanks again for joining us. Really appreciate your time. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.
So. I really appreciate it, Alex. Thank you.
This has been the Future Great City Podcast on nextstl.com. You can subscribe to this podcast via RSS feed or on iTunes, and can follow the site on Twitter at nextstl. Sponsorship of the show is available with details at nextstl.com. Thanks for joining us. Be informed, be engaged, be part of what's next. Nextstl.com.